have done 92 player. Probably most of which at this point, we're going to have to cut out probably a good 20 of those guys to build this top 100, because you're going into the biggest position of them all, both physically and in how many good players there are, centers.
One might say it's the most pivotal position.
You could say that. It's good. It's a good pun.
It's great when I get to make the pun first and doesn't land, and then we could sort of restart this recording and I can remake the pun then.
The pun landed so poorly that the internet kicked you out of the last session and now you have to come back.
It did. Zuckerberg was like, no, that's just not how my internet should be used. Get out of here.
So we have to ask, Nate, who is your number one center of all time?
Bill Russell.
No way. Really? That's where you landed?
That is where I landed.
Over Kareem.
Over Kareem.
Why? What's your, because I feel like the statistical dominance of Kareem and even his success is good enough to say that he's better than Bill.
So I think there's two different things. He has the statistical success part and he has the career success part.
I know where you're going with this. They're separate. They are absolutely separate.
They're separate. And so if I just look at Kareem's statistical successes and Wilt Chamberlain's statistical successes, that first half of his career is pretty similar to Wilt's. And he clears Wilt because he skips that second half. But I've been digging into MVPs. And that 76 MVP, Kareem doesn't get his team to the playoffs. He does there's some chicanery in there because you have to be either top two in your division or there's one divisional wild card. And his entire division, like he's the fourth best team in his division, the Lakers are, and they're better than the other two teams, the top two in the other side of the Western Division.
It's a weird playoff structure.
Yeah, so like he's on the fourth best team, and teams five and teams seven make the playoffs, but teams four and teams six don't in the West. But still, like I want you, if you're in the conversation, to be the number one all-time guy, to be the number five all-time guy, I kind of want you to be able to always gotten your team there. Always been there.
Man, I can't imagine trying to sell this to a crowd. And that's where a lot of this comes from, is I want to be able to make my list. But can I convince children online that that's true? And I just don't know if it is.
Well, here.
Here's something interesting. Basketball for brains. Although we've had our gripes before. He does have a good argument because he has Magic over Kareem in his all-time ranking. That reason being, Magic is so far and away the best player on those Lakers teams that dominate the 80s. Kareem almost gets elevated past Magic because he was really good in Milwaukee, but the team success comes with Magic, and the Kareem does win an MVP for that first ring. But after that, it's a pretty clear 1-2. It's not a 1A and 1B. It's a 1-2.
Yeah. Well, let me talk a little bit about Kareem, because Kareem is probably the presumptive number one choice. And all-time points leader, regular season, number two for combined regular and playoffs. I've heard it said that Kareem didn't do anything until Oscar got there. Oscar gets there his second year, so I don't know entirely what you want. He makes the Eastern Conference Finals as a rookie and loses to Willis Reed, but outplays him. Mm-hmm. Like, Kareem as a rookie, 34-18-5 in the playoffs against Willis Reed, who's 28-12-4. Like, that's a damn good rookie year. Mm-hmm. Wins it with Oscar. In 72, he loses to the 72 Lakers, but also trounces Nate Thurmond, who's a great center, who will be on this list. Kind of post-Oscar's decline, 74, he takes the Celtics to game seven and loses to the Cowan and Havlicek Celtics. Like, that's a good good resume on his own. And individually, Kareem scores 228 points in that series. The Bucks score 644. Kareem scores more of the Bucks points than like Rick Barry does when Barry's averaging 40 points per game in the series. Like, just to put that in perspective, Kareem is, I hate using the word carried because there are other players on that team that don't get their historical, you know, representation, but Kareem is carrying those Bucks in 74.
Absolutely. I feel like Kareem, as a Kareem number one option, his resume is a ring, another finals appearance, a Western Conference Finals appearance, and then you could still argue it, and I think that's the right thing to do, another ring in 1980. Magic is a rookie. While Magic is very good, Kareem is still 30, basically 30-10.
Yes.
He's unstoppable, and I think that's enough for me to say So it's two rings, a finals appearance, and another Western Conference Finals trip.
Six MVPs, and we can quibble. We can look into some of them. That 76 one, very questionable.
Very close.
But, like, most people have one or two awards that you can quibble with. And this isn't like Kobe picking up an All-Star at the end of his career. Mm. We're quibbling about an MVP, which just means
he's at that level.
Yeah. The case for Bill Russell is the year before he gets to the Celtics, they are sixth out of eight teams in defensive rating.
And they had been for basically the whole Cousy and Charmin era. A good offensive team, a bad defensive team, and they hadn't really got them anywhere.
Yes. Once he gets there, do you know how long they stay at number one? Do you know how many of his years from 57 to 69 they are number one?
They're number one until, I think, until 68, maybe 67. Yes. Yeah.
68, where they go to number two.
Mm-hmm. And then 69, back to number one.
There's 17 teams in the league in 69, and Russell is the number one defense again the year before he retires. Like,
I'm still going to push.
I think we got a little too cute.
I'm still going to push Kareem number one just because he was so good for so long. But another interesting thing to note is how bad the West was when Kareem and the Lakers were dominating. Now, they play good teams in the finals, but it's very similar to LeBron taking the Cavs to the finals, playing just really bad Eastern Conference teams like the Magic or the early Bucks. 85 and the 85 and 87, the road to that, those titles was 30 through 35, 42 win teams. They're not very good.
It sounds like you're kind of helping to make my case against Kareem.
I am. I think it's fun to push back on something that's so
ingrained.
So ingrained, but I still feel like, I mean, you're looking at his Milwaukee years being six seasons of 30, 15, and 4. And the success is not, like, it's not, the stats, I think the stats and the success are about where they should be. Whereas where someone like Wilt, with the stats and success are very clearly mismatched.
Let me give you one more thing about Russell.
Go ahead.
Russell plays in 10 game sevens. Do you want to know what his record is in those 10 game sevens?
It's undefeated.
10-0. So he goes up against Bob Pettit twice in game sevens. He goes against teams with Wilt as the best player three times, Oscar Robertson once, Jerry West twice, Elgin Baylor once. Like, he goes up against a who's who, and he comes out on top. And I looked at who was the best player, whether it was him or a teammate, and it's semi 50-50. Like, he does have some great Sam Jones appearances. Cousy really comes through in one of them. But, like, at some point, him always delivering in game seven and always having these good games really has to matter.
He's the greatest competitor of all time, and you really see that in the playoffs. No one else, I mean, you can argue Kobe and whatnot, but no one else cared this much. It's all that mattered, and it's kind of a frivolous thing to talk about, like, how he cared, but Kareem is a little nonchalant. He's a little grumpy, a little kind of relaxed, and even though he was so dominant, you don't feel like the killer instinct was much what was there as much as it was for Bill. I do want to note that the 72 Bucks are one of the three greatest teams ever, or at least one of the five greatest teams ever. That team just was a machine of basketball death that no one could stop. Because we had seen dominant teams before, or the team like the 67 Sixers and whatnot, but the 72 Bucks, it wasn't like Wilt and his buddies. It was just Kareem and an Oscar who had seen enough shit, and they just were just kind of silently rolled up the league.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you could go either way. The more I looked at it, the more I just valued Bill Russell actually dominating, being the best defensive team for over a decade, and winning all those times. Yeah. Where it's like Kareem, the Kareem and Wilt numbers are really close, and I hold Wilt's lack of winning against him, and it's like the Kevin McHale thing again. Like, McHale was a great Celtic. McHale was on three championship teams. He was not a great Celtic for three championship teams. Kareem is an amazing all-time player who has extreme longevity. Kareem has won six rings, but you're right. He's number two on a lot of those rings.
He still leads the NBA in scoring as in the playoffs as late as 83.
Okay.
Also in blocks. He's 27. He does just by the time 1982 rolls around, he just stops rebounding. I don't know. I haven't looked into what spurs that, but he just decides he's never going to rebound the ball again, which is fine. And the Lakers are still very successful. They had guys for that, like AC Green. And let's say Kareem. Let's just call it. Don't do this to me. Don't.
All right. Kareem's one. Russell's two. Well, now we have the next debate. Because we punched ourselves in the nuts and we moved dunking from the power forward position. I think that's going to have everyone mad at us on the internet. Into the center position, we now have to debate Duncan or Shaq for 3 and 4.
I love that we get to have this debate because I'm totally fine with either of them. I'm a Duncan believer personally. Just the dominance. Shaq totally has that, the stretch where he's just one of the best players in the world. Or like the best player on earth for a good 3 year, 3, 5, 4, even 5 year stretch. Duncan's so effective for so long. Really maintains like his this, I'm the number one option, best defensive player in the league from age 21 to 36. And you know, Tony Parker kind of comes in and out. But even as late as like 2013, he's 18 and 10 with 2.7 blocks. He's 36 years old. He's first team All NBA at that point. I don't know. It's tricky. My core belief is that Duncan contributed more to winning basketball over the course of his career than Shaq did. Whether it was his consistency, because Shaq has issues with that, with staying healthy and giving it all to his team, with being able to consistently deliver winning basketball. But when he dials it up, it's better than Duncan. What do you think?
I tend to find what Shaq did and being in three-peating to be one of the hardest things to do in basketball. And Shaq is absolutely dominant. I went through and looked at every single one of those series. I looked at individual games for most of those series. Yes, there are some series where Kobe is good, and there are some series where both Shaq and Kobe are bad. Like, I'm not 100% sure how they beat the Spurs in 2002, because both Shaq and Kobe are off and way below their averages, and like efficiency numbers as well. They're taking a dive. But Shaq powers through, and for three straight years, no one is better than this man. And he's just a walking, just a walking championship. And then I looked at 2004, it's pretty much the same. And the big difference that the Pistons do is they stop him from getting the ball. The only thing that changes is Shaq's touches.
Very fair.
Like there's that stretch. And then 05, him and Nash are neck and neck for MVP. I think it's decided by 13 votes. And then in 06, Dallas spends so much time focusing on Shaq that Wade just goes free. I stand with Shaq over Duncan just because of how dominant he is. It's a shorter stretch. But ultimately, I want someone that is the best player in the NBA as opposed to someone who is the third to fourth and is that third to fourth for a longer time.
Yeah, it's so close. It's like they have equal amounts of longevity and peak,
mm-hmm.
where you kind of start to value it the same. The case for Duncan being his second year in the league, second year in the league, they win the finals, right? Is that the second or third? Second year in the league, they win the final, win the championship.
Yep.
Year after that, Duncan gets hurt, does not play in the playoffs. Then they make it back to the Western Conference Finals, and Duncan plays well, but the Lakers in 01 were just on a mission, and they roll them.
They sweep them.
Yeah. Come back, win another title. Take Dallas. No, sorry, no. I'm all over the place.
You skipped 2002, where they lose again to the Lakers. 03.
They lose against the Lakers.
03, yeah, they 03, win a title.
They win a title. 04, lose to the Lakers. 05, win a title. 06, lose to Dallas. That team ends up losing to Shaq. Then 07, win a title. I think my head's in order on that. I might have skipped another year.
Yeah, you're right.
That's a great stretch. It's either basically the Spurs win a title or they lose to Shaq. And so it kind of goes either way again.
So they win or they lose to the player that I'm arguing is better than
let me see on how they
Can I just say one awesome thing about Duncan that I didn't realize until I did this deep dive is that 99 mm-hmm. series, they play the Lakers. And
yeah, they eat him up.
And specifically, Duncan eats up Shaq. Robinson,
yeah.
David Robinson just chokes in that series. Robinson does all he can to stop Shaq and ends up spending like half the series in foul trouble. He's down to like 28 minutes a night during that series. Meanwhile, Duncan's playing 44 minutes a night because Robinson's just in foul trouble. Robinson can't stop Shaq, and it's kind of like Shaq has to punch through Robinson, and then he has to deal with Duncan, and Robinson just has to survive long enough. But it's a fantastic Duncan series, and you can argue Duncan outplays Shaq in that series.
Totally could. Well, where are your final thoughts at?
My final thoughts are Shaq.
How about Duncan in the 2013-2014 year? Because he's still really good. He's 36-37 in those two playoff runs. He's 17-10, 2 assists, a block and a half, 50% shoot. That's still one of the best players in the league. And I'm a Duncan believer. I can't get my head around it. But
it's peak versus longevity.
Yeah, it is.
Give me just a second here.
Go ahead.
Sorry, trying to get Excel to load, but it's such a massive file that it's taking its sweet time. All right. So if we look at them in the matrix by top win shares, doubling playoffs, yep. Duncan comes in with 28.3 and Shaq 28 even. They are number 10, number 11, back to back. We go 3 year, Shaq's 71.1, Duncan's 69.7. They're number 9 and number 10.
Super close.
If we look at them, it's so close throughout the ranks. If we do 5 year, Shaq is the 10th, Duncan is the 12th. 10 year, Duncan is 11, Shaq is 12th. Full career, it's where Duncan edges out. He gets 6th, Shaq gets 10th. I'll concede Duncan.
Yeah.
But I think these rankings are just so, so close that...
It is so close. I'm happy we're... I think either way we're probably going to get... It's interesting because I know you have Shaq as your 5th best player ever. And you're going to run into some interesting things when we do the top 100 on where we're putting these.
Well, I think when you do the deep dive, you find that Duncan's got more really great seasons. Like, my opinions of Duncan rose. Like, I would have said 99 was a combination series of him and Robinson. And it's not. 99 is Duncan. Robinson's there.
Robinson's still one of the best defensive centers in the league at the time. And that's super valuable. And obviously winning a title, it's never just one guy. There's going to be someone else who's really...
But it's Duncan's title. And it's not close.
It's not a super tough title. You know, the teams they go through aren't super good, especially the Knicks, but that's fine. If it wasn't a tough title, anyone else could have done it.
Yeah.
And Duncan's there. Yeah.
All right. So that gets us down to 5 and 6, which how pissed off do you want to make the internet?
I have Wilt at 5.
Good. Same.
Yeah. He's not, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that he wasn't good because of course he's good. He's the most statistically dominant player ever. There is just an issue with that translating to good basketball. I had somebody tell me on my comments that Wilt was a better defensive player, passer, scorer, shooter, rebounder, basically everything than Shaq. And my argument against that was, if there is a player that was better than everything at Shaq, than Shaq, that's the greatest player ever. That player should have won every game he played in. There's no excuses to ever be on a bad team. If he's really better at everything than the most dominant player we've ever seen, and that's the kind of the issue. It's like, I just don't know if it translates. Like, you had texted me, 1963, Will Chamberlain plays 80 games. And this is after Paul Arison retired. A lot of people would say he was a plumber and he's not even good. But with it in his absence, they win 17 less games and they miss the playoffs. They win, they're the 7th best team in a league that takes 6 teams to the playoffs. And then 1965, before they trade Wilt, that team is 11-33. A team with Wilt Chamberlain on it. And there's other players on it. I mean, clearly him averaging 40-25, if that's winning you 11 games, there's an issue there. Clearly it's not as effective as it seems to be. And it's ironic because at the game before he gets traded, Wilt puts up an insane game statistically against, like, the I think it was 37-6 Celtics. And the Celtics beat them. Kind of the story.
The early Wilt Chamberlain just did not know how to use teammates. And like, this will be his knock.
It's like 2 assists a game. It's not passing.
So in that 63 season, he has a 15-game stretch where he averages 47.9 points per game, 23.4 rebounds, 2.3 assists, and his 1-14.
Jesus Christ.
And like, if you want to say that his he didn't have teammates, you're partially right. Like, sure, he didn't have teammates. But the Bailey Howell Pistons both didn't have teammates, and their best player was Bailey Howell. So, like, you couldn't have been better than the Bailey Howell Pistons to make the playoffs.
That's another point. It's not. I'm not going to sit here and be like, where's Wilt's rings? Like, where are his rings? Like, come on. Because that's unfair. Winning a championship is hard. But I can ask a Wilt Chamberlain-led team to be better than the Bailey Howell-led Pistons.
Yeah.
That's totally fair. I'd be like, can you at least make the playoffs? Like, come on. Especially given his number one contemporary, which, you know, people will swear he was better than, is winning every game he's playing in. There's clearly a difference in the effectiveness of their games. Being able to use your teammates, let's say, you know, Bill had better teammates than Wilt. That is partially because Bill knew how to play with them.
Absolutely. To build off of that, one of the reasons why we still have Wilt this high is once Wilt figures that out and Wilt's numbers start to look more like Bill Russell's, he starts shooting less and passing more. He averages a triple-double to beat the Celtics in 67. He's the 4th leading scorer on the finals team for the 67 and champions. Like Wilt is unstoppable. Once Wilt figures out the game, there is no stopping Wilt. And that's probably why he's still in that top 10 conversation. But all of these flaws are why he's not in the top 5.
I've argued before that Wilt was almost too good at basketball for his own good. He almost had to tone it down. That sounds ridiculous, but he had to tone it down. Because he could score. If you're playing basketball for every time you touch the ball, you're probably just going to do that.
Yeah.
But if that's not working and you have to kind of figure out a lesser way to impact basketball games, it's very strange. It's very, very strange.
Also, one of the knocks that Bill gets is that his teammates are better. And that's not fully true. But also, he gets a lot of those kind of late career guys, the ring chasers. Because if you want a ring chase, you want to go to the guy that's going to keep you involved and give you the ball and help you out, like make your career look good. Versus Wilt. No one wants to go play with Wilt. We've done enough to like denigrate Wilt. Why is Wilt above Hakeem in your mind? Because you know TikTok loves Hakeem and the basketball internet loves Hakeem. Why is Hakeem 10 to 15 but not 5 to 10?
Hakeem has a great 2-year stretch, right? The time before that, sure. he's not taking teams to the Western Conference Finals year in and year out. He's not dragging teams to 60 wins. He's not one of the 5 best players every year. But Wilt kind of is. Even if Wilt isn't winning a championship, you're like, holy shit, I think Wilt might be the second best player on earth, second to the guy who is winning. Wilt just has a grasp on the NBA where he's, I always 4 MVPs in that time stretch between 60 and 67. I feel like, one sec, I'm going to click my thoughts. What was I going to say? I lost my train of thought. I don't know what I was going to say. Go ahead, Nate. You tell them. For some reason, my ears are all messed up and I'm still sick. And so I can kind of hear myself echoing and it's kind of fucking with me.
That can mess with you. Before I tell them, can you guess what Hakeem's record is against Sam Perkins in the playoffs?
You always mention this. It's Sam Perkins is the kryptonite. I think it's like in playoff series.
Yep.
I think he wins 1 and loses 4.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is the thing about Hakeem. It's Hakeem does not dominate in a way that we would expect or in a way that we should. And Hakeem's defense does kind of get overblown and overvalued. Hakeem can defend a lot of bigs and he can switch out onto guards. That does not mean he is impervious to it. And one of the things that teams start doing to him is if you have a stretchier player, you can stretch him out. One of the worst things you can do against Hakeem is to have a traditional big man and a 4 that needs to roll to the basket, which is why we see him dominate Charles Barkley. We see him take apart the Jazz as with Karl Malone. But if you have a team that can be a little bit more flexible and a little bit more versatile, they do pretty well against Hakeem. Hakeem's defense doesn't actually have that much shifts. So
another thing with Hakeem's defense is he can switch out to the perimeter, and people always say that he's the greatest defender ever. I don't really care that he can switch out to the perimeter. I just don't know how valuable of a skill is that to be able to switch like that, to be able to cover ground like that. It's not going to be like I think it is a skill. I don't think it's a skill that is necessarily super valuable. Does that make sense? It's great, but it's not like if he's able to do a million other things. Like, maybe he could shoot threes, or maybe he could... I'd rather him be able to defend the rim even better than he could than be able to switch out. People like the versatility, but versatility is not always better.
Yeah, and when he switches out, and when he's playing passing lanes, and when he's stripping the ball from guys, because he does steal the ball really well for a big man. There's also some misconceptions, because he joins the league a little bit after steals and blocks start being counted. So people are like, ah, he retired as the best blocks and best... steal big man there is. I'm like, well, we lost 4 years from Kareem. We know that he's gonna have more blocks. We don't know what Russell steals like they bring this up and it's comparing apples to hypotheticals. But in 67 or not 67 or sorry in 93, the year before he wins the titles, he loses in game 7 to the Sonics with Sam Perkins. Hakeem has a really good game 7. He puts up 23, 17, and 9. Perkins puts up 23, 9, and 4.
Sam Perkins.
And Hakeem has help. Like, a lot of the things that we talk about Hakeem is that he has no all-stars. And that's just 90s basketball. 90s basketball, you had a star and good teams.
I made a video about that. Yeah. 90s basketball is different. And if you had a second star, you're the Bulls and you win six titles. But if you don't have a second star, you're David Robinson or Barkley or Hakeem in this case. Or even, you know, Karl Malone was lucky to have Stockton. But even then, I consider like 1.5 stars. That's just how teams rebel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if we look at that 94 run, the true starless run, because in 95, he has Drexler, and Drexler's third team All-NBA, and Drexler does a fantastic job throughout that year. That Drexler's as close to Kobe, like the Shaq Kobe for the first two titles. Like that's the same.
Yeah.
Same sort of help. But that first run, they go through the Blazers, who don't have a real center. They've got Cliff Robinson, who plays terrible. Buck Williams statistically has an amazing series. Second round, they go through the Suns, who are starting AC Green at center, and Cedric Ceballos. Not
Oliver Miller.
It's just not good.
Hakeem goes through great teams, but not great centers.
Correct. And that still forces them into game seven. And Hakeem has a great game seven. It's 37 points, 17 rebounds, 3 blocks. He also gets help. Sam Cassell off the bench has a remarkable 22-point game. Like, he didn't have a second star, but he had a lot of role players that could step up at different points.
There's a reason they won the title.
Yeah.
It was a good team. And is it an awesome carry job? Absolutely. Another thing to mention, though, and I mentioned this in a video I made about Hakeem, where I said just because a player can play offense and defense well doesn't make him better than every player that just plays offense well. Because they look at guys like Steph or like Larry or like Magic and say, well, Hakeem played defense, so he has to be better than them. Like, no, like that's just not how basketball effectiveness works. Yeah, he's a great two-way player. That doesn't make him more effective than, because in reality, Hakeem is an all-time defender. And in a good to great scorer,
yeah,
offensive player. He's not Shaq on offense and Bill Russell on defense. He's Hakeem on both ends. That doesn't make him better than Steph, who's arguably the greatest offensive talent like we've ever seen, just a game breaking shooter, or better than Larry, who's able to, you know, he's 30 to 30 a night with all these assists and playing good defense and whatnot. But does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, like if we just want to run through the five guys we have ahead of him. Kareem, amazing statistical performances, 6 rings. Also, Kareem would have multiple Defensive Player of the Years if those were awarded during his time. Like, it's not like Kareem is a slouch. Kareem is the first team defensive center multiple years. That guy usually wins Defensive Player of the Year. It's just logical.
Kareem Russell, is way better on offense than Hakeem Olajuwon.
Yeah. Russell, best defensive player of all time, 11 rings ahead of Hakeem. Shaq, statistically way more dominant. We can even look at the finals where they played each other. Shaq at 22 versus prime Hakeem at his best. His team gets swept, but Shaq is better.
Shaq outplays Hakeem in the 94, in the 95 final.
Yep.
Totally does. Better numbers. Yep. He gives Hakeem like 30 a night on 60% shooting. The reason that the Magic gets swept is Dennis Scott and who was their other 3-point shooter?
Nick Anderson.
Dennis Scott. And Nick Anderson just forgot their hands on the bus or something. And I think they're 35% or something from the field. Like they couldn't shoot. And that's where the sweep comes from. And meanwhile, Drexler's getting 15 and 10 from Robert Horry. And his help is showing up. And then people see the sweep and say, oh, well, Hakeem dominated Shaq. But it really just wasn't close to that. And of course, Shaq is... I've heard people tell me, like, Hakeem is better offensively than Shaq, but Shaq is, the passing is the same. And most importantly, Shaq has more points on better efficiency. There's no way around that. There's no way to find some magical number that makes Hakeem's dream shakes more valuable than Shaq just putting the ball through the basket.
Yeah. And I'd be tempted to actually take Hakeem over Wilt. Like, that's the one where I think, all right, now we start to have this conversation.
It's super close. It's a good pairing of, it's like Kareem and Bill, Shaq and Duncan, Hakeem and Wilt.
But I think Wilt's just statistically dominant. So I think that's where I'm fine with having the top six in those pairs.
We want to say something positive about Wilt and Hakeem?
No.
No? Why not? Because everyone else would do it for us. Hakeem is easily one of the 15 best players ever.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Hakeem is phenomenal. Hakeem is one of the best defensive players of all time and a really great offensive player too. And he's in the top 15, but I'm sorry, he's not better than the other 5 centers we've mentioned.
And the titles are impressive. unbelievably impressive. 94 and 95. I always feel the need to say bad things about Hakeem because people tend to think that those two seasons are a reflection for how good he was the whole time. But let me run these numbers real quick. 94, 95, 96. Let's do 93 to 96. Hakeem is 27 a night, 12 boards, 3.5 assists, 3.5 blocks, 52% effective field goal percentage. That's a great stat line.
It's a good stat line.
The seasons prior to that, 85 to 92, he's 23 points a night on 51% effective field goal percentage. The blocks and the rebounds are the same. So there's such a huge scoring gap. He's 5 less points on worse efficiency in the 8 seasons leading up to that. That people see this great 4-year stretch and like, oh, he always was that good. Like, no, he was mostly more of a defensive specialist in a sense prior to that.
He does have the wonderful 86 run where he takes
super good, yeah.
Takes them to the finals. And him and Ralph Sampson demolish a really old Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, but a still very relevant Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Oh, yeah. And you think about what could have been with Ralph Sampson. He's not on this list.
He's not on your list?
Ralph Sampson's not on my list. You know what's interesting?
Okay.
Ralph Sampson's one of the first like statistical anomalies I notice when doing like basketball stuff. He's a Hall of Famer. He's a 4-time All-Star. He's a very good player. He has 5 VORP. I'm a big VORP guy. He only has 5. He has 5 value of replacement player points. His whole career. It's just interesting. I think it's the lowest, if I remember correctly, it's the lowest VORP by a player that got in because to the Hall of Fame because they're a player. Lowest win shares as well. He has 20 win shares.
He had potential, and it's sad that we never got to see it.
He was, I mean, just even his first year, where he's his first 4 seasons, just let's look at him. He's 20 and 10 with 3 assists on 50% shooting. That's one of the best players in the league, and he could have been, and he's a massive person. Easily could have played next to Hakeem. Could have gone Twin Towers, and that's a whole different story.
I mean, they did. Who do you have as number 7?
I have Moses Malone. I'm interested to hear your George Mikan case. I know where you're going with this.
I started with Moses there. It's the domination.
He, I'm totally for it. Fuck it, Nate. Let's do it. 7 titles in 8 years. Owens the 50. Moses is looking at the deep dive into Moses doesn't reveal as much dominance as you'd like. Right? He takes the Rockets to the finals in 81. They win the finals in 83. But other than that, he really doesn't do anything before 81 and doesn't really do anything after 83.
It kind of leaves me feeling a little bit James Harden-esque.
Yeah.
Of like, he shows up, he takes 2nd in 2 MVP votings, he wins one of them, or wins the third. He has these like 3 years as an arguably best player in the league, and then it's gone. And I don't entirely know how to feel about it. I thought I was going to have him higher, but I just didn't. I looked at Mike and I said, man, this guy absolutely dominated a league. And not only that, Mike dominated professional basketball in a way that the NBA became the league.
He forces the league to get its shit together. They're like, holy shit, this guy's so much taller and so much more athletic than I ever anticipated. Let's make some rules to make sure he doesn't just goaltend every shot and he can't just stand there.
He forces basketball to get shit together.
Like, yeah.
If starting at 1898, the first professional basketball game is played in Trenton, New Jersey. From that time through the 30s, there are dozens, maybe even hundreds of professional basketball leagues. And come, I want to say end of the 30s, start of the 40s, someone in Chicago decides to put on the World Professional Basketball Tournament, where every team can be submitted. It's a single elimination. You've got all these different teams from all these different leagues, all these barnstormers, because no one knows which is actually the best league. No one knows who has the best players. And they do this. And that tournament ends with Mikan. That tournament ends with Mikan and the Lakers winning it and with them playing in the Harlem Globetrotters and winning. And like, there's some back and forth. The Globetrotters do not always lose to the Lakers. The Lakers do not always beat the Globetrotters. There's some back and forth. But Mikan establishes and sets the bar and says, this is the best league. We have the best players. And slowly the rest of other pro basketball folds. It becomes minor leagues. Like, there's the CBA that lasts for a while, the Continental Basketball Association. But Mikan kind of ends other pro basketball leagues until he starts the ABA as the commissioner. Like there's all of pro basketball ends or like leads to Mikan in the 50s.
If you had George Mikan on your team, you're winning the title unless he gets hurt. And even if he gets hurt, if he's just standing out there with like his legs stitched together, you still have a really good chance.
Yeah. Do you know the story of how the Lakers got him?
Vaguely. I wish I remembered the team. Go ahead.
So he was coming out of college and everyone knew he was going to be the number one pick. So the Lakers, instead of buying in and being an expansion team, because they weren't going to give an expansion team the number one pick, the Lakers ownership bought the Detroit Gems, who were the worst team in the league, didn't sign any of their players, didn't take a bag of balls, didn't take anything. They just bought them and assumed their debts so that way they could get the number one pick because they had purchased the worst team in the league.
And that is a beautiful way to do it.
Just imagine if someone's like, you know what? I'm going to buy the Utah Jazz this next year because they're the worst team in the league and we're going to get Victor Wembanyama.
It'd be worth it. It'd be worth it. Do you have a Moses Malone argument? What's your case for him at number seven? Because there's a stretch from 78 all the way up to 89 where he's 24 and 14.
What does it do?
He's one of the, kind of the issue. You know, he has two bullet seasons that they're just mediocre. 89, at that point he's 33. He's still effective, but, you know, Dominique's still there. He's on and off in Houston. He has a great finals run, but sometimes they're good, sometimes they're not. I'm gonna take George Mikan personally.
Yeah, I mean the one thing that Malone has is probably a better competition. Malone plays in a stronger era. But if you look at his 83 title run, he goes through a 25-year-old Bill Cartwright, not the greatest. Then he plays a 34-year-old Bob Lanier, and then a 35-year-old Kareem, and he's about on par with a 35-year-old Kareem at his apex. And
it leaves you look at it and you're like, holy shit, this guy was 20 and 12 for 1,500 games.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, you know, and the assist to turnover ratio is just beautiful. He's 1.3 assists for his career. He's 3.1 turnovers. A little bit of a black hole. He's, you know, his efficiency is the worst of all the great centers. He's one of the, can we agree he's one of the 20 best players ever?
This feels so wild because we're at guy number 8 potentially, and we've done nothing but talk negatively about him. But at the same time, if we want to compare his career to like Kevin Garnett. Garnett has the one title at the end of his career where he gets the right teammates. Malone leads the team to the title at his apex.
That's true.
It is a MVP, gets two other second place. Like in comparison, these are different levels. Malone being eighth versus Garnett being third, fourth, wherever you want to put him in the power forwards. Like
that's true.
They're about on par. So yeah, I'm down with him as eighth. I'll let you make the case for 9. Because I know what you're doing here, and I don't like it.
Steve Robinson. It should be.
I don't like it.
He's better than Patrick. I know. I get it. I think Ewing should go after it. I understand it. I get the argument. The issue being, Ewing isn't as good as David Robinson, and I know the results aren't there. Robinson is so dominant statistically. The scoring is better. The passing's better. The rebounding's better. The defense is better.
Could he make a conference finals?
I know. I know. Could he be
the number one defensive team?
People often say that Robinson's one of like the 5 best defensive players ever. I don't even think of it. Not to be like, maybe that's my own fault, but I don't even consider him when thinking about that list.
Like Robinson, it's Robinson and Dennis Rodman together, and they're not a top defensive team.
What are they? Let's see.
They're
5th. They're good defensive team. They're just good on offense too.
In 93, they're 10th. They are first in 92 and 91. 94, they're 9th. Like, kind of middle of the pack. His best series is getting to that conference finals where Dennis Rodman kind of screws it up there. No spacing. The Rockets trounce him.
Yeah.
But from 1990 to 96, in the regular season, Robinson averages 38 minutes, 25.6 points, 11.8 rebounds, and 52% from the floor. In the playoffs, that drops to 24, still 11.8 rebounds, and 48.8% from the floor. So his field goal percent drops in the playoffs.
24 points?
24 points. So he's going down in points by about 2 points per game on less efficient in the playoffs. And this is your All-NBA first team center for 4 of those 7 years.
It's such an issue because it's basically just a 7-year stretch of him being really awesome, and he wins 5 playoff series the whole time. And, you know, as a second option behind Duncan, you're doing fantastic. That's the best team in the league. You do wish he could... The thing with Ewing is he is better for longer and is able to take his teams to the finals, to conference finals. I think he gets out of the first round like 8 times.
Yeah. I went through and I marked down some Ewing series. Starting in 1990, Patrick Ewing goes up against the Pistons, whose starting lineup is Dennis Rodman, Bill Laimbeer, and James Edwards. I don't know what the spacing was like. That's a horrific spacing lineup. But against those three, Ewing averages 27.2 points, 9.6 rebounds, and 2.2 blocks on a 56% true shooting.
Kills him.
They lose in 6, but like, what do you want? Like, that's a good series.
Yeah.
In 92, he pushes the Bulls to game 7.
And again in 93.
You always hear people say like, hey, Chicago never had a game 7, but with Jordan, but no, Ewing pushed him there.
And the one knock on Ewing, though, is he gets ragdolled by Hakeem in the 94 finals. He does not play well.
Yeah.
It's not the worst thing ever, but they are one Ewing not playing like shit away from winning that title pretty easily. But he's 19 a game on 36% shoot. That's rough.
Yeah. It's not great, but he got them there.
Yeah. And then, but you know, after that, it starts to go downhill a little bit. But they make another, you know, another Eastern Conference semis. And then, but, you know, by 98, he's pretty much done. Yeah. He's still playing. He's still effective, but it's not the seasons you're going to hang your hat on.
Yeah.
Are you sold on Patrick Ewing over David Robinson?
I kind of think I am.
Okay.
Like, is there anything that you really like about David Robinson?
What about, okay, 1984, he's 30-10 with 5 assists. That's got to be worth something, right? Thank goodness. And they lose in the first round to the Jazz in 4 games. That's pretty funny. My goodness.
You bring up this just fantastic series. You know what he did in the playoffs? 20-10.
Yeah, 20-10.
41% field goal percentage.
All right, let's do it.
Hell
yeah. Let's do it.
Finally win one of these.
Patrick Ewing.
All right, at 11, how do you feel about Willis Reed?
That's who I had.
Excellent.
Champion.
Yeah.
MVP.
Gets a pair of rings.
Ooh, man, some NBA news. 2 Warriors extensions today.
The Wiggins one was, maybe it's just not as many years. No, it's a 4-year. 4 years, 109 million. I can't believe that's all he got.
No, it's 5 years, 143 in total.
Oh, but that's what he already has, plus
yeah,
this additional 4-year, 119.
Well, with Draymond, there's no room for Draymond. They already made their decision.
Goodbye, Dray.
I don't think that even if they wanted to, I don't think they have the cap space for that.
I don't think so either. I mean, they can do the luxury tax. It'll be a bill.
Yeah, for $500 million.
Yeah.
It's not worth it. Willis Reed's career is very short. It's about 650 games, only about the first 6 seasons and 7 seasons. The last 3 seasons, he's basically done. But while he's playing, he is dominant. And for an undersized center, about 6'10", he's giving it to Bill Russell, to Will, to Kareem. Super impressive stuff.
His big moment, that like walkout series, is
yeah,
fantastic moment. But like, what's missed about that is games 1 through 5, he's averaging basically 26-15. He's 26-15. Like, it's a really good series prior to him getting hurt and walking out. He is the heart and soul of that team. The last 2 games mess up his averages, but just the first bit. Did you look at all into his 71 series, though?
I did. I did not. It looks good, though, versus Atlanta. Or is this the
Baltimore
Eastern Conference Finals versus Baltimore? No, I didn't see that. Looks like he doesn't play super well. What happened?
I don't entirely know, but through the first 6 games of that series, which goes 7, they lose in 7 to a team they probably should have beaten and probably would have had a good chance of winning the title, well, had they won. But through the first 6, he averages 10 points and 9 rebounds. Like, it's not a good series. Good game 7, though, to try to win it back. Baltimore papers call it the upset of the century. Like,
oh, wow.
I did read that. At least I love doing some of the Wayback Machines and getting like the local papers from these times. Mm-hmm. Baltimore was psyched that they beat the Knicks because they did not think they should have beat the Knicks.
1973 finals, he's 16-9. And that year, he was basically 11-8.5.
Yeah.
So it was a great finals for him in terms of his role against Will, basically.
Yeah.
Man, the Phillies eliminated the Braves. I don't know if you pay attention to baseball at all, but a lot going on.
It's a busy day in sports.
I know, busy day. The Phillies, they won like 87 games. Goodness, someone's home. My dogs are going ballistic.
All right, I got to ask what you do with the number 12 spot, because there were two really good people here, and I don't know if you're going to like what I did at 12.
I have number 12. I had Jokic.
Good. I had Jokic at 12, too.
It's a level that Willis Reed doesn't get to, that Moses doesn't get to. Wait a sec. I think I'm missing somebody. Kareem, Bill, Duncan, Shaq, Will, Hakeem, Mike, and Moses. Ewing. You want a little bit more playoff success, but even then, I don't think Jokic has... It's not playoff failures, necessarily. I think he's playing about as well as he should be. There's no series you can point at and be like, that's the one, that's where he played bad. His teams are just outmatched in a lot of these.
Yeah, and Jokic has some really great performances, even with being outmatched. Like, he has played in four game sevens. Starting in 2019, they're pushed to game seven by the Spurs. Probably shouldn't have done it, but just... It's an experienced team versus an unexperienced team. And in game seven, Jokic delivers the triple-double, 21 points, 15 rebounds, 10 assists, 3 blocks. Then in the second round, they lose to Portland, but Jokic once again has a fantastic game seven, 29-13 on 11 for 26 shooting with 4 blocks, but just doesn't get past Portland. Then they have the bubble year, 34-14 in game seven against Utah.
They come back from down 3-1 twice.
Yeah.
We're talking about someone who's averaging 26, 11, and 6 on 52, 40, 84 splits. That sounds like that's video game shit. This is just one of the best players of all time. You're just waiting for him to do this for another few years, and you're just to put him way up in the rafters in terms of the best players of all time. I think number 12 is a great spot for him.
Absolutely. I think if he does, like, just keeps at this performance, he gets past Willis Reed, David Robinson, Ewing very easily.
Yeah.
He's got some room to catch Moses Malone, but he's getting there.
He's on his way.
Yeah. For number 13, did you have Dave Cowens?
No, I didn't.
Interesting. Who did you have?
Dwight Howard.
Okay. I like it.
He's just one of the best. I think he's 5 straight first team All-NBAs, which it's, you know, speaks a bit about the center position at the time. But there is that good stretch where, and we talk about the issue with the power forwards, building around a power forward is you need someone else next to him to defend the rim. Well, Dwight Howard was that guy. And that's why the Magic were so successful at the time, making it to a finals, making it to the Eastern Conference Finals, is because they had a guy who both was able to score 20 points per game, lead that team in scoring, but was easy to build around. He's the perfect center to build around in that era, the only center that was built around in the late 2000s, because he was so good defensively. He just owned the paint. They surround him with shooters. He reaches a level that I just don't think Cowens necessarily did for an extended period of time.
I like the thought. Cowens has some of the Bill Russell-esque, I'm going to do the dirty work. It's not going to show up in my numbers. I'm going to make all of my teammates better in a way that I just don't see from Dwight Howard.
How about making his team better? You can make your teammates better all you want. Make the team better. Dwight Howard is able to take to that next level.
So can I ask you, what's Dwight Howard's second best playoff run? Where does he make his team better? He's got 09.
He's got 09. They make it to, I mean, it's the next, the year after that, they make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. And although in the first round, I'm not really sure what happens there. I think he's hurt in the beginning, but yeah. I think something to note is 2009 LeBron is one of the greatest seasons of all time. That team loses to Dwight Howard, averaging 26, 13, and 3 on 65% shooting. They just dismantle him. And even later, like, you know, James Harden is the best player on those Houston teams, but they make it to another Western Conference Finals in 2015, and it's Dwight Howard, 15 and 15 in that playoffs, owning the paint. The second best run is important to know, but another thing to know, and we've talked about this before, is what is the era that Cowens is playing in? There's a very specific year, like set of years that Cowens dominates in where the leagues are split into.
Absolutely. But Cowens is in the center heavy league. Like,
true.
If we look at how the league split was, the ABA had a lot of forwards and guards. The NBA had some forwards, some guards, but they were center heavy. And Cowens is doing the best he can against some really good centers. I'm glad you brought up the Charlotte series. the 2010 first round, where Dwight Howard averages 9.8 points, 9.3 rebounds on 48% field goal percentage against the Bobcats, who are starting 36-year-old Theo Ratliff.
Yeah, Theo, or is he on your list? I think Collins is a great 13th. I just don't know if he gets to the same. Like, Collins has I don't know, dude. he has an MVP, and then he's fourth, second, and third. He is all NBA just three times, but it's the center, so he's behind Kareem essentially, and then Bob McAdoo gets him for a bit.
How many guys do you have in between these two? Where's the gap? Is Collins next?
Yeah, Collins is next.
Okay. All right. I'll take Dwight over Collins. I do have two guys also between Collins and Dwight, but I think
the
cases are similar enough. They're Bob McAdoo and Artis Gilmore.
That's exactly where I was too. I had Artis and then I had McAdoo.
I have McAdoo over Artis.
I think I like that, given the roles where McAdoo is just this insane scorer leading his team, where Gilmore is more of like, he's like Rudy Gobert of the ABA. It's like a good way to describe him. He just thrashes a league with no centers, and then he comes back down to earth in the NBA. He has 189 win shares. I just want to throw that out there. Since I guess because it's the Gobert effect, man. He shoots 70% from the field. He's 58 for his career, but still.
He wins one of the worst MVPs in 68 because there's just no competition in the ABA at that time. It's a very, very bad league. And if you look at some of his performances against like ABA versus NBA, I don't think he gets a lot of the awards that he would have gotten had he gone just straight to the NBA.
Yeah, very true. It's that ABA split. I want to point out real quick that I was talking to someone in my comments, and they said like Larry Bird is overrated because he had all these Hall of Famers, and he included Artis Gilmore as one of them. I thought that was strange because he was like 38. He plays 47 games, 3 points a night. Anyways. Shed Artis Gilmore.
Not everyone should use Basketball Reference.
That's true. Artis has a title, 1975. Don't forget.
Well, Artis has an ABA title.
He has an ABA title, but by 75, like the leagues are pretty close, and he's beating the Pacers. And he's 25-21 against the center we're going to talk about later.
It's a good run.
Tell me about Bob McAdoo. Why do you have
McAdoo averages over 30 points for three straight years. He comes really close to winning MVP in all three of the seasons. And just individually, he is a better player than Dave Collins. Like during their apex, they play each other. And McAdoo outplays him, and Collins wins.
So why Collins over McAdoo?
I think Collins has a longer stretch of being good. And ultimately, Collins wins. Collins does the dirty things. Collins does the little things. And that gets him high. That gets him the championships. But I think individually, if you look at the two of them, it's a little bit of Bill Russell versus Kareem. Sorry, Bill Russell versus Wilt. The one plays the team game, does the dirty work. The other one is a more skilled individual player that doesn't quite mesh with teammates.
Think about also that McAdoo ends up on the Lakers and wins two rings, backing up Kareem. Now, we talked about this yesterday. We texted where people tend to overvalue stars that are now playing a backup role, and that's why the two rings for McAdoo doesn't really move the needle, because I mean, he's basically 12 points and 4 boards, and like, you can get that from anybody. Just because it's someone who used to get you 30 doesn't mean it's a special, magical 10 points in it, all right?
I love the way that you phrase that. It's not a magical Bob McAdoo 10 points a night. It's just... 10 points a night. Like, I brought up the numbers of Bill Walton on the 86 Celtics versus Bobby Portis, and they're so close.
They're so close. And going off of that, I had made a bunch of Dennis Rodman videos, and people like Rodman in I think in 97 averages 27 minutes a night. He's 2.7 boards and an assist. And people will look at that and be like, no, but it's a special Dennis Rodman 2.7 boards and one assist. You're like, you could get that. I know, like, there is intangibles that make it more valuable given his defense. You can get that production from somebody else.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a special 7 rebounds, or it's like, whoa, that was a big rebound. Like, it's just it's a rebound like anybody else.
Well, and you can look at the guys that he plays and is supposed to defend, and it's like, oh, hey, Karl Malone had
completely unfazed. And you know, people like, oh, like Robin guarded Shaq, and Shaq was like 30 and 10 on 60% shooting in that Eastern Conference Finals. And
yeah.
Karl Malone has his best series in the year. Rodman plays a bunch and then struggles when Rodman's number of minutes come back down. Like, there's just no correlation to Dennis Rodman playing good defense against any of these guys.
Yeah. All right. So are we comfortable with Dwight at 13, Cowens at 14, McAdoo at 15, Gilmore at 16?
I am.
All right. Who do you have at 17?
Mel Daniels.
Talk to me about him. Got the three rings.
He's got the three rings. He's got the two MVPs. Yeah. You look at it, you're like, yeah, he kind of... The thing with Daniels, and the reason I like him so much, is we say that 68, 69, those are the years where the ABA was struggling, right? It was not as good.
Yeah.
Daniels gets better with time. His rookie year, 68, he's 22 points a game, 15.5 rebounds on 40% shooting. He's not super efficient. By 72, he's 20 a game, 16 boards on 50% shooting. It's a 10% increase. He also got way better at free throws, 57% to 70%. So even as the league gets better, it's clearly Daniels is unaffected. And the Pacers are flourishing. They win in 70, 72, and 73, all in which where Daniels is a massive part of that.
I wish that he played longer.
I think he hurt his back in the shower. If I remember, I read that correctly. Like, he like fell in the shower and hurt his back and never was the same.
Because like 74, he's noticeably worse than 73. 75, he's barely there. 76, the ABA still exists and he can't play in the ABA. Like, he goes and plays in Italy. And it's just a really short ending. I have one guy ahead of him, but I think this guy really should have been in the power forward rankings and we just fucked up.
Who is that?
Spencer Haywood.
Okay, here, 1 second. I found the... So Mel Daniels, 70... Let's see. In 1974, he fell in a bathtub and injured his back. And so that's why his numbers fall down to 10 and 9, basically, instead of the 15 and 12 we had seen the year prior. I had Spencer Haywood way down, just way in the... It is the ABA-NBA issue, where you have this awesome peak for Haywood... in 1970, and he's still, you know, he's still really good, and then it just kind of like so very clearly falters when the leagues merge.
It does, but we at least got to see him when the leagues merge. So if we do 70 to 75, Spencer Hayward's averaging 26 points, 13.6 rebounds, and he's doing that the majority in the NBA. He's doing that 5 seasons in the NBA, 1 season ABA. Mel Daniels, we're looking at 17 points, 14.8 rebounds, and he's doing that 100% in the ABA and continuing to like decline.
Okay.
Like he never makes it to the NBA.
I think I didn't spend long enough on Spencer Haywood. He also plays for the Denver Rockets, which is cool. That's cool. That's enough.
Yeah.
Okay. So are we thinking, do you like Mel Daniels at 17, or is there someone else you're thinking of?
I realized I completely skipped over Artis Gilmore.
We had Gilmore at 16.
Yes. Okay. Okay. So then Haywood, 17. Mel Daniels, 18.
Okay, deal.
Do you have a hot 19 take?
Neil Johnston.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel like you hate it when I bring up guys from Neil Johnston's era.
I don't hate it.
Okay, tell me about Neil.
He bridges the gap between Mike and Bill. He, from 53 to 58, he's basically 20 and 10, leads the league in scoring 3 times, leads the league in rebounds per game once, 3 times the league in field goal percentage, twice in minutes per game, and he wins a title in 1956, and he plays really well during it. That's kind of all you're looking for. It's like, was he really good? Check. Was he statistically dominant? Check. Were his teams good? Check. You're like, I think it's a really good player.
See, I had been dropping him down because of that era and that lack of competition.
But that's like, this is the last player we're seeing where it's just a dominant championship winning.
I think that's fair.
You know, and the rest of the, yeah, I think, let's see. Because I don't even think... He comes 12th in MVP award shares in 58, but I think that's the first year they did it.
Okay. I'm convinced. I was going to make the case for either Dan Issel or Robert Parrish, because I think I'm kind of at that point where I'd rather have the guys that are the complementary stars.
Mm-hmm.
Like what Robert Parrish does in the 84 finals. Robert Parrish is so good defensively, and he never makes an all-defensive team, and I just find that preposterous.
I would argue that Parrish is more important than McHale to the 80-something.
He never hits the height of 86 McHale, and I think that will keep him behind McHale when we, you know, do the rankings. But he's more important for longer.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a sense, just centers, like we've talked about with the power forwards. Power forwards are awesome. They need a center. Parrish was that center. He's the reason they could keep guys like Kareem in check.
Yeah.
Okay, are you happy with Neil Johnson at 19?
Love it. Neil Johnson, 19. Are we good with Parrish at 20?
Okay. Parrish at 20.
Who did you have over Parrish that you wanted to talk about?
I had a few people, actually.
Okay.
Just because of the levels they got to.
Also, how deep did you go? How many players do you have on your rankings?
I have 28.
Okay. I went down to 32, but some of them I kind of tossed on there as more of like reminders to mention.
I'd love to hear him. How do you feel about Nate Thurman at 20?
Not a big fan.
Not a big fan. Tell me. Talk to me.
Where are my Nate Thurman notes here?
Second in MVP voting. They go to the finals. He gets tossed around by Will, but we don't have to talk about that.
Yeah.
That's a rough series. Tough series for him.
Yeah. I wish he was the second best center at some point. Like, he gets second in the 67 MVP votings, but still doesn't make second team All-NBA. So, like, there's some debate there because one is player voting, the other is media voting. He does get ragdolled in the 67 finals, like 14 points, 26 offensively, rebounds.
The 26 rebounds is pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, 34% field goal percentage.
How about his 1972 Western Conference semis against Kareem? He's 25-18, 5 assists.
It's good. So I looked at how the league expands. Because when he joins, there's 9 teams in the league. It goes up to 10 the next year, 12 the following, 14 the year after that, finally 17 and 71. So like the league expands, and he's generally the 4th or 5th best center in the league. So that's like upper third of centers for some context. I just didn't find a lot that I really liked about him, which his name's Nate. I should have some biases here towards him. And it's just... It never fully connected. I know one of the things that you love to look at is like field goal or points added by field goal percentage. Did you take a look at that for him at all? He does not have one single positive season.
That's true. But he's so good defensively. He's so good defensively. I mean, he's essentially, if Bill Russell was as bad on offense as people say he is, you get Nate Thurman.
Yes. Yes. He is Bill Russell without any offense. And probably not as much defense, too.
No. I mean, it's close because he's such a good rebounder. He's perfectly 15 points and 15 assists per game. The scoring totals are there, you know, over, you know, compared to Bill, really. But not super efficient. I think Nate Thurman's one of the 100 best players ever. But I'm open to hearing. Okay, let's do Parrish. I like Parrish. Let's do it.
All right.
I'm sold.
All right. Number 21 for me, I've got Dan Issel, and I could be talked out of Issel.
I think I forgot Issel. I totally did.
7-time All-Star, 5-time All-ABA, ABA champion in 75. Does have a pretty sharp drop-off. He doesn't actually have that sharp of a drop-off coming to the NBA. His ABA stats the 2 years prior, the stats the year prior. He's averaging 23 points, 11 rebounds. The year afterwards, 22 points, 9 rebounds. About the same field goal percentage. Like he is a consistent force, ABA and NBA. He's more of a number two on championship team than number one.
That's kind of where I was going, is he never really reaches, like, the peak that you're looking for. I think he's a great, great pick. Looking at the guys we have left, I think I'm interested. 21, Dan Issel.
If we do the win shares test and we look at the matrix, his top season is 26th best all time. Mm-hmm. 3-year peak, 35th. 5-year peak, 36th. 10-year peak, 32nd. And career win shares, he is 27th. It's a longevity play at this point. Is that longevity more valuable to you than Wes Unseld and or Bill Walton? Because they're number 22 and 23 for me.
Yes.
They both.
Yeah, it is. Can I offer somebody else? Just really quick, sure. Just toss him out there. He has a third place MVP finish. And it's very close. Let me double check on this.
Is it Alonzo Mourning?
No.
Bill Lanier?
Bob Lanier, yeah. 20-10, his whole career, 8-time All-Star. The playoffs are a little bit of a struggle, but he's undoubtedly playing well.
Wait.
The team's...
Repeat what you just said.
The playoffs are a little bit of a struggle, but he's undoubtedly playing well.
Okay, The playoffs are a little bit of a struggle. Might be an underselling it.
He plays well. All of his, I mean, his Detroit seasons in the playoffs. Let me double check for you.
It's when he
makes
things.
It. When he makes it, he's 26-14, 3.5 assists and 2.5 blocks, 54% from the field. Like he, at no point can you say, "Well, Bob Lanier didn't like come."
Yeah, I'm good. I stick with Dan Issel.
Okay, let's go Issel.
And then I've been on my Walton kick, and part of that is me like picking apart the Walton numbers and skepticism and like overpraise. But there is a point where Bill Walton is a fantastic player, and when healthy, a lot of the guys we've just mentioned don't hit that peak. It's just such a short peak that I've knocked him back. But I think we're getting real close to Walton range.
Oh, we're definitely getting close. I still have some people ahead of him that I really like.
Okay.
You argue that, like, I mean, Bob Lanier is 20-10 for basically 1,000 games. Bill Walton is really good for about 120 games, counting playoffs.
Yeah,
that's not enough. You could make a legitimate argument that Bill Walton did winning a title solves it really, but did more hurt than help to the Blazers because they just had this guy who wasn't healthy for a majority of the time. They easily would win the title in 78 if they had Bob Lanier in 78, they win that title. But they had nobody.
The Pistons in 78 won 38 games with Bob Lanier,
and that's way more than they would have won without him. And the Blazers would have won 38 games without Bill Walton, but
with Bill Walton, they were 48-10 and on pace for like 67 wins. They were an absolute juggernaut.
That's true. Okay, all right, I'll settle for okay. Here's some I would value what he's done at the level he's done it, even if it isn't for very long. Over the Walton case, how about Joel? The level he's been at, he's played in 328 games. He's 26-11-3. Three assists.
The Matrix considers them almost identical. They're so close. Because Bill hit that peak, Joel didn't. Personally, I would just say that if Embiid never played another game at this point, I'd take Bill Walton.
Okay.
The championship does matter to me.
Yeah.
I think they're almost identical. And I can certainly get there because Walton has 2 All-Star seasons. That's it. Embiid at this point, was he 5, 6?
5 every year he's played except for his rookie year, and he probably would have been his rookie year if he just came back sooner.
So like Embiid has already had a greater longevity even with all of his limitations.
That's insane. He barely plays.
the 78 MVP is really something that you can pick on and for Bill Walton, because it's not a great MVP. It really should go to George Gervin. It's one of 3 MVPs where the winner didn't at least get half the percentage of votes possible, like didn't get half of a full MVP share. And like Embiid taking second the last 2 years and putting up statistically dominant performances, which if you would rank them amongst MVPs would be mid tier. Like, but just Walton winning the championship, that's kind of where I'm at for him.
Here's a good question. Where do you think Joel Embiid is in the MVP shares list?
Higher than Bill Walton.
Higher than Bill Walton. By how much?
I'd say another half an MVP.
Yeah, essentially. Joel Embiid is 38th with 1.3. The Walton is 72nd with 5.2.
Yeah, yeah. But the championship and leading the team there and being healthy enough to lead the team there.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
I would...
I'm not... Go ahead.
For the sake of the list and not continuing to argue some of the same guys, do you want to go Dan Issel, Joel Embiid, Bill Walton?
Deal. 22nd Embiid?
22nd Embiid. Who is next up on your list?
Let me see. At this point, Nate Thurman's been dropping. I feel like this is a good spot for
him. All right. I still have Nate just quite a ways back. Are you sure I can't interest you in Wes Unseld or Alonzo Mourning?
I'm interested. I mean, I'm interested in Wes Unseld. The Wes Unseld MVP makes no fucking sense. I get it. I understand what happened. It was a huge turnaround. He did a little stuff. They finally won games. It's tricky, man. It's really... It's hard to sell. He's such a good rebounder. He's such a good passer. It's tough to sell me like the glue guy over the number one options. That's kind of where I'm at.
Well, I think my argument is that Nate Thurman's not a number one option.
I wouldn't say that he was, but still he's putting up more of a statistical imprint, like with the scoring, because Thurman gets up to 20 points per game.
But he's a negative points added guy. He's that bad on offense that he's a like you can say he's scoring more. But
it's not like Unseld is super efficient either. Like, no, massively efficient.
Unseld's not scoring. Unseld's passing. Unseld is generating positive offense with his screens and with his passing more so than he is with scoring.
All right, I'm in. Let's do Unseld and then Thurman. How do you feel?
All right, I can take Unseld, Thurman, and then how do you feel about Alonzo Mourning?
Why not Bob in here? Where's Bob going? I like Alonzo Mourning. There is a peak there. 1990s and 1999. They go to an Eastern Conference Finals. 1997. Playoffs are a struggle. Playoffs are a struggle for him too. It's not really there.
Yep. He doesn't have a lot of great success. In 2000, they take the Knicks to seven games, which that's not a great Knicks team to lose to. In game seven, Zoe has a great game. And his supporting cast, Jamal Mashburn and Tim Hardaway Sr., combined to go 9 for 35. Moves by a single point.
Jeez, man.
Like, Mourning is one of the best defensive big men, super versatile. And if you want to try to talk me into Dikembe Mutombo at this range, because he actually won and helped.
We're getting there.
I'd consider Mutombo over Mourning, but Mourning was at least second in MVP in 99 and actually had a time where he was a really good player.
Yeah, I mean, he's 20-10 with 3 blocks from his rookie season up until he gets a kidney disease.
Yeah.
Let's go, Zoe.
Let's go, Zoe. And then I will tell you, Bob Lanier was next on my list. I've whittled you down, but I got here. I got Zoe over Lanier.
Fantastic. All right. How about someone that I personally had over Mutombo? How about Ben Wallace? Crucial. Absolutely crucial to the Pistons' success, leading that team in, I think, in minutes played in their championship year. But he's playing just an absurd amount of minutes on really good Pistons teams. In an era, you know, his offense is really bad, but it's not like Rodman, where his offense is bad enough and his defense isn't worth it to sit him down. He's out there, and the Pistons are very successful with him. He's arguably the best player of the Pistons in the finals that year.
He is, and I really actually, you might even be able to talk me into him over Alonzo Mourning, over Bob Lanier. Statistically, the Matrix hates him because he statistically doesn't do a lot, but I think that's something that an analyst or anyone that watches basketball can see and be like, yes, this guy outperforms his numbers. And so I'm more comfortable having him at the end. But I want to float out one more name.
Go ahead.
Kind of before we lock in Mourning, Lanier, Wallace. What about Yao Ming?
I did not consider him. He escaped my criticism. The issue with Ming is he's the inconsistencies and the injuries hold the Rockets back, and it's almost like it's a big what if. Super talented when he plays, but it never comes together like it did for Embiid last year, and like it did for Walton in 77.
Totally fair.
It never clicks for him.
Totally fair. But I think while he's healthy, which his career is over, he was not healthy all that much. But I think he's a better player than Ben Wallace when healthy. And maybe he's just not healthy enough.
I don't think he's healthy enough. The gap in the difference is Wallace's, and I brought this stat up from 2002, 2007. He's 9 points a game, 48% shooting. So this is in the playoffs. In 93 playoff games, he starts every single one. He's 12.5 boards a game, 2 steals, 2 blocks, playing 39 minutes a night. He's out there in crucial playoff games for a Pistons team that needs him. And I bet Houston would have loved to have him over Ming at the time, because Ming, you know, couldn't stay healthy. But I like Yao Ming even before Mutombo, if you want to go there.
I'll take Mutombo over him, because I really love Mutombo's longevity.
Yeah.
So are we okay with Mourning at 26, Lanier at 27, Ben Wallace at 28?
Mutombo at 29?
Mutombo 29, Yao at 30?
Yao at 30, I love it. Is there anyone else you want to mention?
Yes, I have three more guys that I want to float their names out there.
Okay.
We've got Ed McCulley.
I thought about him. My issue, and the reason I didn't spend much time looking into him, is he's there with Charmin and Cousy before Russell gets there, and it's just not working.
That's the difference between the number 4 best player of all time and the number 135.
That's true.
But I at least wanted to put his name out there, and like the second best player on a ring title team, and when he goes to, how would you rank the Hawks? next year that they win with Pettit.
Well, he's averaging like, let's see.
His averages aren't great, but he brings a lot to that team.
Let's see. Yeah, I'd say it'd be Cliff Hagan.
Yeah, all right. So third guy between Cliff and Pettit. Just want to throw that name out there for posterity.
I want to throw out that Jack McMullen, is it McMullen? McMullen plays 2,239 minutes for the Hawks that year. He gets a negative 0.7 win share. So what was he doing?
Not productive basketball.
He shot 30% from the field. That's what he was doing.
Another guy whose name I just want to put out there is Zelmo Beatley. Or Beatty?
Yeah, Zelmo. Okay. I honestly, he's one of the ABA players that I just couldn't tell you what position they even played. He did not come to mind.
Well, and Zelmo plays good in the NBA, but not like super great. He's like an every other year kind of all-star guy. Mm-hmm. And then jumps to the ABA, and that probably extends his career. And he has two more 20-plus, 10-plus, well, actually like 23 and 14 over those 2 years. And then another all-star in the ABA. There's definitely a lot of era things that keep him in consideration.
That's a fun player to mention, though.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to make the top 100, but eventually this is going to get expanded out. We're going to need these names again.
Sure. Well, he's number 100 in the Matrix, just how it looks at players.
You want me to write him down?
He has some stats.
You want me to write him down for 31? No. All right. We'll keep him.
No. And then the other name that I would throw out there is Rudy Gobert.
Yeah. I don't think he's top 100, but he's probably top. I think I have him like a top 150. And I just did this shit off the top of my head.
Matrix has him at 162, but it always undervalues defensive players. So, like, Ben Wallace, significantly undervalued. Rudy, was he four-time defensive player of the year at this point?
Jeez, four times? I don't think so. I think just three. I don't think we would have let that shit happen four times.
Yeah, all right, you're right. Just three times. Over-adding. But still, he's at three. Ben Wallace is at four. Dikembe Mutombo is also at four. Like, he's in the conversation with these guys, and while he gets exposed in the playoffs, him by himself is a number one defense during the regular season that can almost guarantee you like 50 something wins.
That's true. We're gonna see it this season,
which is not actually something that Ben Wallace can do. Ben Wallace is a playoff defender. He's the 16 game player. Rudy is the 82. And I think that there's some value. If we redo this list next year, I think there's a chance that Rudy slides into that top 100.
Yeah, I think so too. Well, I love the top 30. I think a lot of these, like upwards of 25 of these guys might slide into the top 100. And that's scary for every other position because we would be at 8 spots to start.
A lot of those shooting guards are getting bumped.
All right, would you like to read our top 30 list? Because I'm sick and out of breath.
Sure. Humming in at number one, we got Kareem, Bill Russell, Tim Duncan, Shaquille O'Neal, Wilt Chamberlain, Hakeem Olajuwon, George Mikan, Moses Malone, Patrick Ewing, David Robinson, that's 1 through 10. Starting at 11, we have Willis Reed, Nikola Jokic, Dwight Howard, Dave Cowens, Bob McAdoo, Artis Gilmore, Spencer Haywood, Mel Daniels, Neil Johnston, and Robert Parrish. Going 21 through 30, Dan Issel, Joel Embiid, Bill Walton, Wes Unseld, Nate Thurman, Alonzo Mourning, Bob Lanier, Ben Wallace, Dikembe Mutombo, Yao Ming. Any final thoughts or guys you wanted to mention?
I think it's a perfect list. You couldn't do any better. And when we come back, the top 100 begins.
I love it.
Starting top 100 players of all time with Aaron and Nate. Can they mesh this together? I think the system we've drawn up is just perfect because we're going to have a nominee from each position every time. We get to pick from a selection of 5 players for the next spot.
I think it's going to be good. I think we've got a lot of potential. We'll see how it shapes out. I do just want to say, for anybody out there that is an Embiid over Jokic person within like the course of the regular season, or you know when we were doing player ranks, they're not that far. There's like 10 guys between them in these rankings. They're not that far apart in actuality.
That's true. Jokic is probably looking at one of the 50 best players, and Embiid probably one of the best 80 or 80, 85, 90.
Yeah.
It's not that far apart. And then so I think that the difference really isn't it's not the recent play, it's that Jokic has played in like 150 more games at a higher level. Embiid doesn't play very much.
Exactly. This could flip. They could get right next to each other after a couple more years. Like,
that's true.
Chill out. Don't add us with that opinion. Our opinion's fine. Let us know. Don't add us with that.